couple weeks ago was the public school holidays, so my kids were off, and I took them to see the M.C. Escher exhibit here in Brooklyn at Industry City. It's a show of his original work spanning his entire career, and it's wonderful. It's open the rest of the month if any of you want to check it out. I told the kids a little bit about Escher's art beforehand, and I showed them his famous drawing of the two hands drawing each other. One kid was excited, the other was skeptical, but it was a rare outing alone with mom, and so they were basically happy to be going. We got there to this hipster gallery built into a giant old warehouse, and as we entered the labyrinth of rooms, on the left, there was a little theater that was playing a loop of a video about Escher's life. The kids, of course, wanted to watch the movie. They were drawn like iron filings to a magnet. I said, come on, let's look at the art first, and then we can come back and watch the movie at the end if we still want to. They reluctantly tore themselves away from the screen. We entered the first room with Escher's stunning woodcuts, and the kids immediately started complaining, dramatically, about being hungry and wanting to leave and having a stomach ache and being so thirsty they could feel their tongues cracking. They were antsy and they were gazing longingly back at the room with the movie in it. My son even darted back there at one point and I had to pry him away again. Why again did I think that coming here with 2 8-year-olds would be a good idea? But then something really interesting started to happen, and I only realized it was happening after about 20 minutes. We started to move through the show. We looked at Escher's famous Tower of Babel print, and I told him the story of the Tower of Babel, and we talked about how amazing it is that he could create this look of light and dark and angles all by carving into a block of wood backwards from the way that it was going to show up on the paper. We looked at his fish and birds and how he tricked the eye with negative and positive space. The negative space of one was the positive space of the other. Which one was the real one, the fish or the birds? Am I a person dreaming that I'm a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm a person? As we wound our way deeper into the gallery, the work started to get, for lack of a better word, trippy. This was before the age of psychedelics, but his creatures got weirder. Black and white became color. He played with perspective and made large things look small and small things look large. He created intricate, symmetrical, cascading designs that looked like mandalas. He represented whirling infinity. And I realized that the kids' complaints had fallen away. Their bodies had quieted, and they were starting to show me stuff that they liked. Look, Mom, come over here. Here's another negative and positive space one, but this one has different animals, and there's a person upside down. That's so cool. They were actually interested in the displays of the drafts that Escher sketched before making the final piece. Something had shifted. Roger Cooper was the winner of this year's auction sermon, and he gave me the inspiration for digging into what was going on here. He had been thinking about my sermon critiquing algorithms and the data-driven life that we're leading, and he wanted to know, what does the alternative look like? What is a more human life? How can we be grounded and guided by something deeper, something spiritual? It's a good question, but it's a hard question, because by definition, you can only get at this kind of thing indirectly. The source of our humanity is something ineffable. It can't be cataloged or quantified. If it could be, then it would be part of the algorithmic world. But I think that the experience that my kids and I had at the Escher exhibit is a hint of what this deep humanity is all about. Over the hour that we were there, The kids had slowed down. I had slowed down. And slowing down our bodies and breathing and attending to these almost 100-year-old drawings, hand-drawn images on the wall, our minds opened in a different way. Without the electric background hum of our lives, we could allow in a new vocabulary and go on a journey with the artist as he explored where that vocabulary could lead. We got to see the building blocks of his universe, see the world through his eyes. It felt like a mystic had let us peek behind the curtain to see the gears of the cosmos. The experience was totally different from day-to-day modern life, totally outside. We got to see that there is an outside. And we never did make it back to see that movie. It's not that the fast-paced world of algorithms and technology, productivity and consumption is all bad. This is the time and place that we were born into. It has its benefits, and it's part of the curriculum of our experience on this earth. But the question is there nothing else? Is that world the real world, and the world of spirit is just an optional extracurricular activity like basketball? Or is the cosmic world of the spirit the real world, and the algorithmic world just a small piece of it? Which world defines the terms of our lives? Which world grounds us in our deepest values? Am I a person dreaming that I'm a butterfly, or am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm a person? It turns out that to some extent, we have a choice in the matter. When we make space for a different dimension of life, we create an outside to the world that we normally live in. When we let in the experience of art, and I'm not just talking about visual art by dead white men, but all kinds of art, and music, and dance, and drama, and poetry, and fiction. And when we let in the experience of religion, with its silence, and its wild, joyful music, its mythic stories and prayers yearning for the holy, these things have the ability to swivel our perspective. What was large becomes small, and what was small becomes large. Something can shift and open up inside us. We can tune into a different level of consciousness. The technocratic world where we spend most of our time can shrink and take its rightful place as a small piece of a vast and multidimensional universe. It's just one frequency on the radio. The same thing can happen when we spend time in nature. Humans evolved living in natural environments, and when we walk in a forest or by the ocean, to our bodies, it's like coming home. Our stress hormones go down, our heart rate drops, and we breathe. It's been shown that even walking in an urban park or down a leafy street, without, you know, texting at the same time, can help us feel calmer and more centered, and it even stimulates our creativity. Just that. When I think about natural places that I've visited, it's deeply comforting to realize, it's comforting to me to realize that while all the churn of our world is going on, all of the online drama, all of the politics, all of the pain caused by the politics, that somewhere out there, those trees are still standing there, gently swaying in the breeze, rooted and free. It's not easy for us modern city people to surrender to these kinds of experiences. We feel the tug, myself included, and just like my kids did in the gallery, the tug of the screen, the tug of the rush, the fear of missing out, the insecurity of needing to prove ourselves in the social world, news, sports, shopping. Some of us may not be addicted to technology per se, but we still have our own versions of striving to keep up and produce and consume. But when we can surrender, when we regularly step outside, our hearts expand. We can start to feel more human. We can start to be guided by different things. We can begin to be guided by our own inner voice, whatever your nickname for it is, the voice of God, the voice of conscience, the voice of love. Some people call it the divine spark, or simply our souls. We can be guided by the innate wisdom of our bodies. Our bodies are not just the hardware casing for the software of our minds. They're part of who we are, and they know things that our conscious mind does not. We feel music in our bodies. We connect and touch with our bodies. We feel butterflies of excitement in our stomach or dread in our chest. And when we walk in a forest, it's our bodies that tell us that forests are good. These sources of guidance are available to us all the time, voices of wisdom always speaking to us, but it's hard to hear them amid the din of modern life. Learning to listen to them, listen for them, and listen to them is one of the arts of being human. It takes some clear intention, some clearing of space, some sacrifice of time. I find that it takes nurturing the more human part of myself the way that I try to nurture the more human part of my children at the Escher exhibit. Many of us are just like kids in this respect. We're a little immature in our ability to downshift into a different mode of being. We're easily distracted, and we're hungry for all kinds of fleeting treats. We need a little compassionate nudge toward deeper spirituality. So I think the trick may be to take ourselves gently by the hand and gently pull ourselves away from the movie about the art and go see the art. Repeatedly redirect our own attention from what we want to consume to what we can participate in. Being here on a Sunday morning, a walk by the river, a book discussion, making music with friends. Be our own parent and set limits on screen time. And as a last resort, hide the devices. Roger Cooper wrote a beautiful thing about how delicate our spiritual life is. It's printed as the Sabbath quote at the top of your order of service. It says, "The spiritual dimension of human life is like the thin cover of our habitable atmosphere on the planet. It is the fragile layer of human meaning that we inhabit. But it, like our natural environment, is threatened by technology, but also just modern indifference. The question is how to protect it, enrich it, and sustain it." Knowing that it needs to be protected, enriched, and sustained is the first step. There is a world beyond the world of algorithms, a world not accessible through data and reason, but only through creativity and faith, human connections, and awe at the majesty of nature. Today, it's more important than ever to cultivate our ability to access that wider world. May we lead ourselves like small children to slow down, open our eyes, and tune our radio to a higher frequency. In so doing, may we all be grounded and guided in becoming more fully human.